Good morning. This is Fran Michel with some thoughts drawn mainly from an article by Jane McAlevey from In These Times about what Me Too can teach the labor movement. McAlevey notes that behind the recent headlines about sexual harassment lies sexism, misogyny, and contempt for women. Whether in the workplace or in the labor movement, sexual harassment isn't really about sex. It's about a disregard for women, and it shows itself numerous ways. For the Me Too movement to become a meaningful movement, it has to focus on actual gender equality. Lewd stories about this or that man's behavior might make compelling reading, but they sidetrack the real crisis, and they're being easily manipulated to distract us from the solutions women desperately need. Until we effectively challenge the ideological underpinnings beneath social policies that harm women and hem them in at every turn in this country, we won't get at the root cause of the harassment. This requires examining the total devaluation of so-called women's work, including raising and educating children, running a home, and caring for the elderly and the sick. The activities McAlevey points to are those of social reproduction, the arena of reproducing the labor power that creates value in capitalism, that is, of reproducing and sustaining people. As Tithi Bhattacharya puts it, if, according to Marxist theory, workers' labor produces all the wealth in society, who then produces the worker? Put another way, what kinds of processes enable the worker to arrive at the doors of her place of work every day so that she can produce the wealth of society? Silvio Federici notes that the concept of social reproduction stresses that the reproduction of the workforce also takes place outside of the home, in schools and hospitals, for instance. But, Federici points out, reproduction has two sides, in contradiction with each other. On the one hand, it reproduces us as people, and on the other, it reproduces us as exploitable workers. The question is how to turn reproductive work into a reproduction of our struggle. McAlevey stresses that the union movement must step in now and connect the dots to real solutions, such as income supports like universal high-quality childcare, free healthcare, free university and paid maternity and paternity leave. We need social policies that allow women to be meaningful participants in the labor force. But sexist male leadership inside the labor movement is also a barrier at getting at these very solutions. McAlevey suggests that such leaders fail to recognize the value of organizing over mobilizing and advocacy. They tend to fetishize the factories where blue-collar men produce material goods and fail to see the importance of the white-collar and pink-collar workforce in schools, universities, nursing homes, and hospitals, devaluing as women's work the so-called public sector. McAlevey stresses that capitalism is one economic system, period. The fiction of these seemingly distinct sectors is primarily a strategy to allow corporations to feed off the trough of taxpayer money and pretend they don't. This master lie enables austerity, which is turning into a tsunami post-tax bill. And yet white, male, highly educated labor strategists routinely say that we need totally different strategies for the public and private sector. Hogwash, says McAlevey. This deeply inculcated sexist thought, conscious or not, is holding back our movement and contributing to the absurd notion that unions are a thing of the past. But the forthcoming Supreme Court ruling on NLRB versus Murphy Oil will prove most of the non-union so-called innovations moot. Murphy Oil is a complicated legal case that boils down to removing what are called the Section 7 protections under National Labor Relations Act and preventing class action lawsuits. Murphy Oil blows a hole through the legal safeguards that non-union workers have enjoyed for decades, eviscerating much of the tactical repertoire of so-called alt-labor, such as class action wage theft cases and workers participating in protests called by non-union community groups in front of their workplaces. The timing is horrific and uncanny. Just as women are finally finding their voices about sexual harassment at work, mostly in non-union workplaces, as the majority are, Murphy Oil will prevent class action sexual harassment lawsuits. The central lesson the labor movement should take from the Me Too movement is that now is the time to reverse the deeply held notion that women, especially women of color, can't build a powerful labor movement. Corporate America and the right wing are out to destroy unions, in part so that they can further decimate the few public services that do serve working class families, including Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and public schools. Movements won these programs when unions were much stronger. It makes sense that unions and the women's movement should throw down hardest to defend and grow these sectors, largely made up of women, mostly women of color, who are brilliant strategists and fighters. The labor movement should also dispense with the belief that organizing and strikes can't work. Unions led by Chicago teachers and Philadelphia and Boston nurses, among others, prove this notion wrong. The growing economic sectors of education and healthcare are key. These workers have structural power and extraordinary social power. Each worker can bring along hundreds more in their communities. Another key lesson for labor is to start challenging the inept leadership in the Democratic Party by running its own pro-union rank-and-file sisters in primaries against the pro-corporate Democrats in safe Democratic seats, a target-rich environment. Those who marched with women last January should demand that gender-focused political action committees, such as Emily's List, use support for unionization as a litmus test for whether politicians running for office will get their support. It's time for unions to raise expectations for real gender equality, to channel the new battle cry to rid ourselves of today's sexual harassers into a movement for the gender justice that women in much of Europe already enjoy, to think of winning what have become almost normal gains in many countries, year-long paid maternity and paternity leave, free childcare, health care in universities, 6 weeks annual paid vacation is not pie in the sky. To fight for it, people have to be able to imagine it. Unions, warts and all, are central to a more equal society because they bring structural power and collective solutions to problems that are fundamentally societal, not individual. Women in the United States are stuck with bosses who abuse them because to walk out could mean living in their cars or on the streets or taking two full-time jobs and never spending a minute with their kids. Similarly, women are stuck in abusive marriages because the decision to stop the beating means living on the streets. European women from countries where union contracts cover the vast majority of workers don't, to the same extent, face the decision of losing their husband's health care plan, or not having money to pay for child care, or so many of the challenges faced by women here. This country is seriously broken, and to fix it, we must build the kind of power that comes with high unionization rates, which translate into political, not just economic power. Naming and shaming is not sufficient. Women need to translate the passion of the Me Too movement into winning the solutions that will help end workplace harassment. It's going to take a massive expansion of unions again, like what happened in the 1930s, the last time unions were declared dead, before we can translate Me Too into a demand that raises all workers' expectations that this country can be a far more equal society. If we commit to this goal, we can achieve it. For The Old Mole, this has been Fran Michel, reading from the work of Jane McAlevey.